My, my, your diamonds look wonderful. Hi, I'm Paul McInnes, and welcome to Music Weekly from Guardian.co.uk. On this week's show, we're giving you the last word on the Brits. We've got music and interviews with the night's big winners, plus the authoritative comment you've come to expect right here in the pod. We'll review new music from Malachi, the Maccabees and Doves in Singles Club. We'll have all of your face back, well, the good stuff anyway, and we'll be having a good old mumble with New York Gloomster's Crystal Stilts. But first, let us listen to the band judged Britain's best by the Brits Academy. Yes, Talbot. So, after being ignored for what seems like centuries, Bury's finest are now the most celebrated musicians in the land, following up last year's Mercury Prize with Best Band at the Brit. Here's Guy Garvey on what it means to him.
This is really special. We love where we live and we love making music, and to be involved in these celebrations is like, yeah, a really big thing. Everybody's at home. All our loved ones in front of the telly. Several parties organised back in Manchester tonight with everybody sat around the television. It's weird knowing they can see us and we can't see them. We've been up to Scotland and written some beginnings of something new.
We've only just started, really, but we've made a good start.
We're touring all the cities that we didn't do on our last British tour. And we get to play Blackpool, which I don't think we've ever done before.
It's Llandudno.
That was Guy Garvey and the rest of Elbow. Llandudno, look out. And congratulations to the band. They thoroughly deserve it. Which brings us smoothly on to Duffy. The night's big winner with three awards, count 'em, made some pretty much incomprehensible speeches on the night. And here she is after the show, talking about imagination and elevation.
When I get to Warwick Avenue, meet me by the entrance of the tube.
I was wondering this morning what I would know tomorrow, and it seems that I've come away feeling happier than I ever imagined. And people say, can you not imagine what you've achieved? But to me, I still live as the same person. I have the same problems. I have a headache when I wake up in the morning. Nothing changes. It's just the fact that people are receiving what you're doing really well.
Independent, take it to the first now. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. So if I'm being honest, elevation is a good thing. And sometimes it's nice to be elevated because it's, you know what? I'm not going to lie to you all, it's hard. It's really hard. You know, you sacrifice something, you do music, you don't know what you're doing it for, and then suddenly you get a night like tonight which says, you know what, you have been recognised. So I'm very happy.
That was Duffy, and you know, it's hard. Speaking of hard, the Kings of Leon didn't do too badly out of the Brits either, even though they only chose to thank the English in their acceptance speech. After the show, though, they corrected that error. But first, the booze.
So far, so drunk. It's been nice.
First time here, so yeah, it's been great.
I think when we're home polishing all of our awards, it'll probably sink in that all of our hard work has finally paid off. But for now, we're just going to enjoy the moment and get our trophies drunk tonight.
I think everything about this band is owed to the British fans. I mean, American record labels would have definitely given up on us by now, but thanks to you guys, now we get to do whatever we want to in America, so that's great.
Indeed it was. That's the Follow-Ills and Friends proclaiming their freedom of the states. Next up, it's Florence of And the Machine, who had to award herself her Critics' Choice gong after Katy Perry went home sick. Afterwards, she was forced to explain to adult hacks how she's not like last year's winner, Adele.
I think me and Adele's a really amazing artist, but we're very different, and I'm not going to be making exactly the same album that she did, so who knows what will happen. I've been trying not to get too drunk before I accepted my award, but I still managed to burst into tears as soon as I came off the stage. I was like, oh, so many people I forgot to thank. I've been so nervous, so I think I might try and go and have some fun now.
That was Florence, and her debut album is out later this year, so you can make your own mind up then. Earlier this week, C6 Steve said he'd never heard of the Brit. So when he made the show, it seemed only fair to ask whether he knew any of the other nominees in his category, Best International Male.
No, I don't know none of them. I know Neil Diamond. Well, I heard a little bit of that Jay-Z because I played at Glastonbury this year, and I think he played there too. So, but I never heard his music, you know. I know he do hip-hop and stuff, I guess, you know. But, I'm so out of it, man. You might as well be talking to a tractor. I think they made a mistake or something, you know. They're going to realize it pretty soon. I don't know. I've never been to one of these before, so I have no idea what it is. As long as there's some food, I'm a little bit hungry. Okay, well, as long as there's drinking and food, that's the part I care about.
You might as well be talking to a tractor. Excellent. I think I'm going to put that on a T-shirt. That's the inimitable C6 Steve. The showstoppers, quite literally on the night, were the Pet Shop Boys, who accepted their Lifetime Achievement Award and played a 95-song medley of their greatest hits. One of their special guests, Lady Gaga, explains how she hooked up with Chris and Neil before the boys themselves join in to reminisce.
Neil and Chris are a dream. They're so very kind to me, and I have been such a huge fan of theirs for such a long time, and it's just a dream come true. They called me and they said, we really want you to sing with us during our medley at the awards, and I said, yeah, right. I was like, who is this?
We knew we were up for it. We thought probably go to a rock band, not a pop duo like us. Awards don't necessarily mean that much to you, but when the music business says they're going to give you outstanding contribution to music for 25 years of music, it's a very warm feeling.
We're not just really a pop act, we're just songwriters, really. We just happen to work in the medium of pop, which we think is always the freshest form of music.
What have I? What have I? What have I done to deserve this? What have I? What have I? What have I?
Since you went away, I've been hanging around. I've been wondering where. I'm feeling down. You went away. Did you make me feel better? I don't know.
What have I? How long
I get? I don't think we've ever felt like part of the furniture. It's just not, I don't think we've ever felt completely like insiders in the pop music business. I don't think we did in the 80s or the 90s or now. We've always done our own thing. And I think that's probably one reason we're getting this award tonight. People maybe appreciate that we have an integrity and we do the Pet Shop Boys thing. We do pop songs. We produce other people, normally women. We write for other people, like we just wrote Girls Aloud's record with Xenomania. We've done kind of art projects. We've kind of created our own world, I think, and I think that's what's important to us. My favourite act of last year, which I guess is what we're celebrating tonight, was probably The Last Shadow Puppets. I love that album.
That's the Pet Shop Boys and their 10th album, Yes, will be out in March. PSB, we salute you. Okay, you've heard from the winners. Now, let's decide whether they deserved it or not. Alongside me in the pod are two distinguished members of the School of Britology, Dr. Rosie Swash and Professor Alex Needham. Hello to you both.
Hello.
Hello. Rosie, I'd like to start with you first.
Yes.
What did you enjoy most about the ceremony?
Well, I had no hopes whatsoever for the Ting Tings Estelle collaboration. And this is partly because I think the Ting Tings, as I said yesterday on Twitter, but not very well because I was drunk, are like the kind of band that scriptwriters for Britannia High would make up as like edgy, and they wear like colourful clothes. They really wind me up. And Estelle, I like a lot, but she can't always sing very well live. She struggles a bit. But from where I was sitting, it was all right. Alex's face.
This is going to perhaps become a theme. Rosie was sitting very close to the stage and had different acoustics for the rest of the world. Alex?
Well, a friend of mine, he didn't Twitter me, but he changed his status. No, he messaged me on Facebook to say that it's nice to see the Ting Tings before they disappear back down the dump. and I replied that them and Estelle, it was two for the price of one.
Doesn't Estelle have the backing of the US R&B fraternity there? She might be around for a little bit longer. But I like those mashup things. I like the fact they try them at least. And I thought at the beginning the American Boy medley bit was energetic, or the bashing of the drums and all that sort of stuff.
I thought it was, I mean, it was a bit of a din. It wasn't quite as bad as Rihanna and the Klaxons doing golden scans and an umbrella. Yeah. But I don't know, it all stemmed from when Kylie did Blue Monday, didn't she, in about 2002. And since then you've had ever more outlandish combinations.
Well, everybody stopped making mashups themselves, isn't it?
Yeah, the Brits continue in typically cutting-edge fashion.
I'd like to bring up another unlikely... Well, I wasn't expecting to like this. I was expecting to take a toilet break in the middle of my live blog. But Take That for me, thought were brilliant. I don't know, is it like... I don't know much about Devo. Maybe not the most adroit comparison. But the whole straight-facedness thing, that they just didn't crack a smile... Probably because they were trying, that was the only way they could kind of get away with the miming aspect. And the glasses and the UFO. I just thought we're all great, just created a great moment in the show and was an act of theatre, even if the song itself maybe isn't that strong. Although they seemed to kind of get a good sound out of the rig, which not all of the bands managed.
That's because they were miming, Paul. they were the only band who didn't perform live. That was very obvious watching it on telly.
Right.
It wasn't that obvious from where we were, but it was really brilliant when the ceiling just started coming down and Take That were on this sort of orb thing. I was like, what on earth is going on? And I actually have grown to love that song because I've heard it so much.
I didn't understand what the... Presumably it was some reference to a film. Was it the Fantastic Four?
Know.
I'm not up enough on comics and stuff to know.
The Day the Earth Stood Still?
Maybe it must have been something like that.
But what I just wanted to add to this, because now we're all fascinated with Twitter, Mike Skinner and Calvin Harris have been Twittering each
both
other about it.
Absolutely.
And they've both been raving about the lasers that Take That used, and they've been trying to establish precisely what type of lasers, etc. And observed Skinner at one point, "Coloured lasers are the fucking shit." So if Mike Skinner's rolling along with Take That, they must have done something right. That was a highlight for me. Alex, you're going to talk about Duffy.
Well, Duffy is a kind of a classic Brits winner, isn't she? I mean, there was a thing on ITV2 afterwards where they were going on about the people who've previously won Best Band, and you just remember at the beginning of this decade, like Travis were sort of holding all before them. And for me, you know, Duffy is to Winehouse what kind of Travis were to The Verve or Oasis or something. It's just a kind of a very record company friendly version. Obviously, it's been very commercial. You know, she's had a couple of really big hits, which I suppose you can't argue with in terms of that they've been popular all around the world. But I don't know, it just seems like a very vanilla, blanded out version of... So I don't think it's got any authenticity. And often I like stuff that's kind of fantastically unreal, you know, like the Pet Shop Boys were. But as Neil Tennant was saying in that clip, they've got their own sort of integrity. And also they're doing it all themselves, you know, that they are their own creation. Whereas Duffy is just a sort of slightly scuffed up pop idol.
But she's been from Cardiff to London and back so many times. Can I just quickly ask you, because you're a music journalist of many years standing, how would it work then with the Brits Academy? Would there be lots of people actively choosing Duffy, or would it be that there were just everybody else would be so split that the kind of she would come out as biggest minority? Or,
well, it's always a bit of a shady thing, the Brits Academy, because I always imagine that some people's votes are worth more than others. I don't think it's a precise democracy. I think it was quite rough on Coldplay in a way, you know, sort of massively successful all around the world, got 3 Grammys last week. Whether you like what they do or not, they are a totally homegrown success. But it's a classic Brits thing, and maybe a classic British music industry thing, that you just... You know, people are praised to the skies on their first album, but you know, if you've made three or four albums, as Coldplay have, people, you know, you don't get the kind of recognition. You know, you don't really get the Mercury Prize, you don't get the Brits, and you know, people from the British music industry moan that it's all too fast and disposable, but they're totally doing it themselves.
Yeah, well, watch out Arctic Monkeys next year if that's the case. Then with their third album, Rosie, yes. you. you, from your vantage point in the middle of the floor, were quite impressed with the production values on display.
Well, it was. It's not just that. It's just that when you watch it on television, you're really sort of... my feeling about the Brits is always how awkward things feel, you know, the interaction between people and all that sort of stuff. But from the other point of view, there didn't seem to be any faux pas. Like, remember Vic Reeves said that big thing about Kai last year and it went down really badly and swearing on it. There wasn't anything like that. If you were a Brits organiser, you would just think that went really well. It seemed really slick to the point where I was just like, oh, is it over? Like, there was no big...
So I saw the Telegraph Online were reporting that Duffy swore in the broadcast. Again, we didn't see it.
She is the new Winehouse.
I think they dropped out the rude word she said. The only embarrassing thing, actually, was on the Fern Cotton interviewing Guy Garvey, interviewing Elbo and David Hasselhoff, when she said, oh, are you going to go out drinking with... I think Guy Garvey said, oh, are you going to come out drinking with us? Obviously, David Hasselhoff's a recovering alcoholic.
He said yes, he said he'd let Elbo have the drinks themselves. I'd just like to add one final word about the hosts. I wasn't particularly enamoured with any of them. I mean, speaking as somebody who isn't very good with links, and it sometimes takes one to know one, but I didn't think Kylie was a great actress, singer, clothes horse, but I think presenter wasn't too great. And I just, Corden and Orne, oh my word, I found them repellent. Consistently crude throughout the show, like just trying to put themselves at the centre of everything, and just that from shaven ball bags to putting one up something or putting another inside somebody else's mouth or something like that. I just went on and on and on. No more of that, please.
Did you see they squeezed everyone's bottom who went up to the lectern? You probably didn't see that because you didn't watch it on telly, but everyone got their arse grabbed whether they wanted it or not.
Well,
men, women, you know.
Congratulations to them. That's enough Brits chat, I feel, but before we leave the subject entirely, Rosie,
yes,
you've got an exclusive.
I caught up with Jed Doherty, the BPI Brits chairman and UK head of Sony BMG earlier this week to get a bit of scoop on this year's show, and I wanted to know actually what's different about the Brits 2009.
The majority of the awards, 8 of the 14 awards, there's normally 13, this year's 14, are voted for by the Brits Academy, which is 1,000 people across all of the industry, record companies, be they major or independent publishers, radio and TV people, social secretaries from student unions, retailers. And this year we freshened up the list because we thought there was time to sort of freshen it up, which has brought a different mixture of nominations. I think that, to me, that's one of the things you definitely notice from this year. The breadth of the nominations from C6 Steve on the one hand all the way to Girls Aloud on the other hand. And I think, to me, that's one of the things you would notice. What are the things that you noticed actually out of interest?
Well, I wondered what was behind the decision to revive the Best Producer Award this year.
British music's doing so well around the world now, and producers play a huge part in that, and I think it's about time we recognise that again. 4 of the top 6 selling acts in the world last year were British artists: Leona Lewis, Duffy, Coldplay and Amy Winehouse. And British producers played a big part in all of those records, and so we felt it was time again to recognise the producer.
I mean, let's talk a little bit about that, because I get, especially on the back of the Grammys, which were really... I mean, there was one award that was almost entirely dominated by British acts. And
that's right, the main award, where all 5 categories
exactly
were British signed acts, yes.
Why do you think it is now that all of a sudden we've got this sort of golden age of British pop stars?
I think that, well, A, these things tend to go in cycles, but B, I think the British industry has figured out what its core competency is, if you like, which is finding and signing and breaking the best British acts. And for a while, perhaps as an industry, we'd taken our eye off the ball. But I think as the world, you know, the world has changed massively around all of us in the last 15 years. You know, if you look at how the internet has affected us all at work, at home and socially, I think against the backdrop of that, the industry for a while wasn't quite sure what it should be doing. But, you know, I talked to all my counterparts at the other labels, because I work for Sony Music as well as running the Brits, is that we figured, you know, if we make great records, people will still buy them. And that's what we've all been focusing on. And to me, that focus on the A&R process, i.e. making the records, choosing the right producers, arranging the songs, not being afraid to sit with the artist and say, this song's not right for the first single, you should add that one with the second single. You know, it's all part of the A&R process. So I think we've all been getting our act together a lot more in the creative area.
Well, I mean, you do constantly read all kinds of articles that would say that these are really dark days for the music industry. But then there are also reports on the contrary to that. So, for example, last year, the O2 Arena, which is obviously in London, had the biggest ticket sales of all major arenas in the whole world. Do you think this is an example? And, you know, going back to what we were saying about the kind of British pop stars that are doing so well at the moment, an example of the British music industry really weathering the storm?
I think the British music industry is weathering it better than a lot of countries. The issue for the industry is this is the first time we've had to compete with free. And whilst I say we're nowhere out of the, you know, we're not out of the eye of the storm yet, there is reasons to be cheerful and reasons to be hopeful.
Okay, that's Jed with Reasons to be Hopeful. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is The Brit. I think it might be time for a little music now. So without further ado, let's get into Singles Club. Alex and Rosie are going to stay with me. And here's our first choice, The Kingdom of Rust by Doves. Pack my bags, thinking of one of those hours with you, waiting for you. My God seeks an ocean of trust in the kingdom of rust. That's Doves with Kingdom of Rust. Doves are a three-piece from Manchester made up of lead singer Jimmy Goodwin and brothers Jez and Andy Williams, who, don't you know, were previously 90s dance band Sob Sob. Kingdom of Rust is the title track taken from the band's forthcoming album, their first LP in four whole years. What they were doing for the previous three, who knows? Investing in the buy-to-let property market, perhaps. Alex, this is your choice. Care to tell us a little bit about why?
I like Doves because they do a very specific thing. They're kind of Mancunian in the way that Elbow are, in a way. And it's got quite a poignant video, this, of a guy driving to scatter someone's ashes on Blackpool Beach. But at the same time, they've got a kind of slightly euphoric edge to their music as well. You can tell that they used to be a dance combo. And I just think it's that sort of happy, sad combination. It's very unique to them, very sort of northern. You know, they managed to be emotional without being too sort of lads go sentimental. And I just think that they're very subtle in the way they do things.
Is this classic Doves, this track?
I don't think it's as distinctive as kind of There Goes the Fear was their big comeback single, you know, years and years ago now, and Black and White Town I enjoyed as well. That was them doing Northern Soul. This is maybe a bit more sort of back to basics, and I suppose in a post-Elbow landscape it probably works really well,
because
they were doing a similar kind of thing, you know, before Elbow, where people talk about how it's taken ages for Elbow to get to the big time, but Doves have been, you know, underrated for probably even longer than that.
Yeah. And you wonder whether Elbow might open the door for a bit more for success for Doves this time around.
I think so. And also, you know, Doves aren't the most aesthetically pleasing band in the world. So maybe Elbow have, you know, pushed open the door. Exactly. Well, I don't know. I mean, over the past sort of 10 years, you know, I've sort of found it exciting as well. But indie has become very kind of glamorous and very sort of, you know, very, very, very young and very fashionable in a way, and I think all that sort of stuff is starting to be washed away a bit. So I think it's good to celebrate now people who've been just keeping on, and, you know, just making good music in quite a low key and sort of non flashy kind of way. Great faint praise there, isn't it?
I agree with Alex, and I think you. Have some kind of summed up what it is I like about Doves, and they do really capture the sound of Matt Listening, specific Manchester about them, the happy sad combination. And I know people always compare them to Elbow, and there's loads of different reasons for that, but one of them is that when I lived in Manchester and Doves played there a lot, they were absolutely huge, and everyone had a place in their heart for them, and there's something really great about that. You know, it's like the opposite of what we were talking about with Duffy and all that stuff. There's just totally organic, kind of, you know, homegrown, locally loved band who do what they do really well, and I hope that this, and also Black and White Town, yeah, absolutely amazing song. I thought it was fantastic with a brilliant video, and you know, totally underrated. And maybe if, you know, if that was the kind of song that was being released now, people would be hailing them a bit more. But so we'll see.
Another thing, as well as them not being super good looking, is they're not kids either, and it's kind of not kids' music. I like the fact that it's a bit grown up. It is sophisticated, yeah.
And both in the musical construction as well, it really swells to a right crescendo at the end.
Yeah, very much so.
Okay, well, that is Kingdom of Ross by Doves, and it's out on March the 30th. But you can hear it now on their MySpace. Next up is Malachi with Fading World. It's past its prime in so many ways. This land is a miserable rock, stuffed like a food at the end of a sock full of razor blades. It's mine, the right to defend at all. That's Fading World by Malachi. Malachi are a two-piece from Bristol who were signed by Portishead's Jeff Barrow to his label Invader. Scott and G, as they're called, have received favourable reviews from Q, NME, and even our own Paul Lester on New Band of the Day. And you can read Malachi's reviews of their reviews on their MySpace. They're quite funny, actually,
yeah, very funny.
From my experience. The duo cite everything from dub to 60s pop as an influence, but they do not, we repeat, not make trip-hop. Why, my choice, and okay, they make trip-hop. But it's of that particular Bristolian kind for which I have an affection. The dubby effects, the echo on the voice, the Horace Andy vocal impression, and the scratching that kind of characterised Portishead for a bit. And also, being kind of a hip-hop fan of a certain age, the sample sounds like some kind of DJ Premier gangstar stuff, which I'm very fond of. And I also, to add another bit that I do like, the whistling coda at the end, I think is rather touching and sweet. Rosie?
Yes, I do like this song. It kind of, when I first heard it, it made me think of the Avalanches meets sort of Beta Band, but then on repeated listening, it's got a lot more to it than that. It's not just effects. I think the lyrics are great in this. It really, once you realise what he's singing, you're a bit like, oh. And not least of which, because Jeff Barrow is one of my favourite people in music, so anything that he does and Invalida does.
I was going to say, there was the one lyric which we got in the clip there, stuffed like a foot at the end of a sock full of razor blades, which I wasn't quite enamoured with myself. Alex?
I liked it a lot. I like their sort of 60s pop influences. I think the people have mentioned the Zombies, but they've got that kind of thing that was coming at the sort of 1967, 1968, slightly whimsical, but made a bit tougher by all the samples. And I think it did progress beyond trip-hop. And again, it's a sort of a sound that has been sort of in the background of British music for a while, but as the more kind of trendy stuff recedes, you can sort of see it coming to the fore again.
Wow. We are core 8, 2 out of 3, and we're all in agreement. All right, the Malachi album, Ugly Side of Love, is out on February the 23rd. Finally on Singles Club this week, it's the Maccabees with No Kind Words.
If you've got no kind words to say, you should say nothing more at all.
That's No Kind Words by the Maccabees. Former pod guests, the Maccabees' debut album, Colour It In, was released in 2007, though their biggest success, monetarily anyway, occurred when their song Toothpaste Kisses was used for a Samsung ad. This is the first song from their follow-up. The five-piece chose their name by looking through the Bible. But despite flicking through the good book for inspiration, the band would like to make clear they are not religious in any way. Rosie,
yes,
you choosy.
Well, the thing is, I don't think it's that astounding a comeback single, whatever you want to call, you know, for the second album. But there's the Maccabees. I've always really liked his voice. You know, personally, and I like the combination of Orlando Weeks, the lead singer, and I think it's Felix, who's the other guy who sings, and they kind of do that the whole way through, and I think it really works. They were just, the kind of band that I'm probably never going to hate anything they do. This was quite surprised to hear that this sounded a bit Joy Division-y, and I wondered whether that was willful on their part to not to try and progress what they'd been doing, and not worry so much about being sort of labelled like a lot of those other 2005-2006 kind of post-punk acts, you know. And it's weird to interview a band who are quite sullen and rude and still like their music afterwards, which is what happened. So it's not amazing, and you know, it's not the most amazing thing I've ever heard, but I will never hate anything that the Maccabees do, and they're great live.
It's also got Matthew Horn on the video, I'd like to point out.
Which is has not influenced my decision. Stop trying to smear campaign me and saying, oh, I like Matt Horn.
He's everywhere, Matt Horn. I'm off to the theatre tonight and he's in the lead role. In entertaining,
he gives
Mr.
me the
Sloan.
Creeps.
Are they cloning him underground someplace in Wales?
He's certainly got a good agent.
He has indeed. Alex, I quite enjoyed this song. Sounds like Block Party-ish to me. There's something that strikes me about this band as insincere in the way that you've been talking about other bands and kind of authenticity and stuff. Does that ever cross your mind?
Well, I do think that this kind of music has been mined to death, really, and to keep doing it, I think you need a really good reason to do so, and I don't think that they've hit on that. I mean, I think that they're, you know, it's very well done, and it's inventive in the way, you know, the verse is a different rhythm to the chorus, and so it has been thought about, but I just think that there's something missing. And also, I think when you know, bands hate it when you ask them, why do you exist? But I do think you need a reason. You do need to be doing something that nobody else is doing. And I think being kind of vaguely
gothy...
Enjoying
making music is not enough.
I don't think it's enough of a reason for someone to buy... Yeah, it's enough of a reason for you to make music for fun. But I think for people to really believe in you and get behind you, you know, you need to be giving them something, you know, more than just good music. You kind of need a bit of a concept and a bit of an emotional heft that you know, comes out of a... like an identity which is of more than the music.
Mm-hmm. Do they open the ugly door? I don't think they do they? I think they pass through the turnstile marked handsome. Anyway, the single No Kind Words by the Maccabees is available for free as a download on their website, themaccabees.co.uk, right now. We want your reviews of this week's tracks from Doves, Malachi and the Maccabees on our blog at the new easy web address of guardian.co.uk/musicweekly. Thanks to Alex coming in to join us for Brits Plus Singles Club today, a mammoth stint from the man I like to call Boss.
Thanks very much, I've enjoyed it.
He likes to call you Angry Tomato. Anyway,
that's it for this week's Singles Club, and for Brits, it's time for some Yanks instead. Here's Crystal Stilt. Departure by Crystal Stilts, which you might recognise as having featured on Singles Club a couple of weeks ago. Crystal Stilts are yet another band hailing from New York, but their sound is more Mary Chain than Mary Wells, though there's a bit of that too if you listen very closely, and so it was only a matter of time till they started making waves over here. I spoke to them earlier this week after a live show which brought the Klaxons out, amongst others, and I started off by asking them if they were any more upbeat in real life than they are on record.
I'm not an overly excitable person. Although I like fast songs.
How do you motivate yourself to make music then if you're kind of a laid-back kind of guy?
It takes less energy than most other things.
Those songs were also written, I think we were a little bit woozier at the time we wrote those songs. You know what I mean?
If you are always busy and come and, you know, taken up with other things, maybe you'd have less time to ponder the kind of things that go into writing a song.
How would you describe, therefore, the tone of your album, the emotional tone of your album?
It's up and down, right? So I think that was pretty deliberate to do, like, not all dark songs. I mean, it's generally there's, like, a dark overtone, but those were kind of the songs that we were writing at that time. In 2004 and 5 were fairly dark.
And why the dark stuff?
There's a lot of sort of confusion and bafflement and bewilderment on the record, and that was just most of the songs were written right after I moved to New York. from South Florida. So it was just this sort of new thing, this new crazy metropolis all around you. So,
did you find other people who were similarly confused?
Not in terms of not at first. We were actually, I think, shocked at first that nobody else was really doing what we were doing. I think just now in the past year, all these bands that have you know similar sensibilities are sort of poking their heads above water, and we've developed a sort of friendship with several bands that we play with.
Now when you see other bands, you know, that are maybe by journalists such as myself, are putting you together in a category with other bands and saying, you know, this is a scene.
What bands?
Well, kind of bands like the Vivian Girls, obviously, and other bands whose names temporarily escape me, but kind of have a similar kind of fuzzy, rocky sound.
I think we're all for it. I mean, that's stuff we like to listen to. You know, we're friends with a lot of those bands, whether it's Cause Commotion or Pains of Being Pure at Heart. So, you know, that they're doing well and that there's this supposed scene happening is, you know, it's great.
If you took all the bands that kind of are friends with each other via the internet or from playing, like, you know, like Psychedelic Horse Manure and Times New Viking, there is a bit of a wave, so to speak.
Yeah, I think that's true.
A lot of talk about you has been about the bands that sound like you've been influenced by, or that from the Jesus and Mary Chain, the Velvet Underground, or the Chills of band are often cited. How do you feel when people say these sorts of things? Do you recognize those influences?
Yeah,
on you?
All of those bands are really important to us. You know, that doesn't offend us at all. At the same time, some bands get repeated more than others, and you get the feeling that, you know, it's a bit of lazy journalism. They're just sort of, nobody's really going to take a risk, and they repeat the same things they've already heard.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, all those bands that we hear have been important to us at one point.
There's also influences that are very seldom mentioned that are equally as influential on the record, too, though, which, you know, like... Like the Trogs, or, you know, stuff like that. That's just as much of an influence as Joy Division.
There have been a few people who we admire a lot who have, you know, written or come up to us and said that they like the record, like Dean Wareham, Galaxy 500 and Luna, and like Steven Pastel, and like that means a lot when something that I guess you sort of see yourself as being in a lineage, when you get that acknowledgement from them, that mean, you know, that means a lot.
Outside of music, see what I've done? I've taken a common concept and I've flipped it. Which characters from history are most influential? Where do you turn to for inspiration?
I wrote a thesis on Rambo. His sort of whole life is really important to me, you know.
So you're going to quit the band in a couple of years and become a slave trader in Africa?
Yeah.
Great. Yes. You know, I don't know. Just the idea of doing... what you want to do at all costs, but at the same time, you know, I'm not going to get into it. But
but this is entirely the type of area I was hoping we might get towards.
I like Jacques Rivette, that filmmaker. He's pretty inspiring. He was part of like the French New Wave. The way he thinks about the world and makes films, I guess, is somewhat. He's one of my favorites.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay,
I'll think about it.
Jay Leno, it is. But if you come back later on, we'll update it. If you were in a shopping mall, which shop would you go into first?
The one that sells cheap socks.
Very good.
I'm going to go to the food court, get an Orange Julius.
Oh, my word. With maybe a Jean Rivette movie on the portable DVD player. What is an Orange Julius?
It's like a citrus beverage that you used to find in food courts in American malls.
I can't top that. Again, I can't top that.
I just look
where
at you.
What did you like in the mall?
Yeah, in the mall, what? I hated the mall.
Yeah.
I hated the mall.
So where would you go instead of going to
the mall?
A friend
of mine worked at a kiosk where he sold like little toy airplanes or something, and I used to go there and hang out. It was pretty ridiculous. That was the place I usually went.
Did he let you play with the airplanes?
Definitely.
But break it, you buy it.
And finally, I'm a big fan of your music, and I like to dance to it. I find it very danceable. But sometimes I find it hard to work out your lyrics. What would you advise to make it easier for me to understand what it is you're saying?
Read the lyric sheet that comes with the record.
Like,
ouch.
Yeah, I mean, like at the same time, I mean, that's kind of, I mean, that's for somebody who says, you know, I'm not a get up and go person, that's kind of a lot of engagement.
Oh, well, if you're interested, then, you know, I mean, you should be into a song before you're really paying attention to the lyrics. Yeah. And then afterwards, if you want to find them out, you can look at them. But I like the vague sound.
Even I have probably heard those songs more than anyone on earth. Sometimes would jumble, like, I think he was saying something different until, like, I asked, you know.
Did he turn back to you and say, look at the lyric sheet? That was Andy, Brad and JB of Crystal Stilt, and their debut album, A Light of Night, is just out on Angular Records. Okay, so after all that, we've just got a little bit of time for some faceback. I'm going to do the friends really quickly. Dan Bennett, Lauren Hogan, Rick Muir, Scott, Laura Mapete, Fraser, David Butler, Mike Eccleshaw, James Baxter, Helen McCrory, Sap, I, and five others. That's copied and pasted from Facebook. Nathan Wesley, Harvey Chamberlain, Phil Huddleston, Quentin Coward, and Francisco Ferrero. Facebook Guardian Music Weekly had this to say, Rosie.
James Etherton wrote, hi, I've been posting on the Guardian's blog as Know the Ledge, I think is a play on the word knowledge. How come the comments were taken down so early this week? I'm sorry about that. We went in and rectified it very quickly. Rosie, since you're...
What? So active, so proactive.
I'm trying here, guys.
No, you're doing really well.
Rosie, since you're taking the helm for the next couple of weeks, which is now over, I'm afraid, any chance of a scuzzy noise pop feature? And I really hope Mr. Ward wasn't quite such a charismatic black hole as he sounded. I do think he's capable of resplendent music.
That's kind of the opinion seems to have swung back on the blog. There's been quite a few people going in and supporting, backing M. Ward to the hilt, haven't they? On the blog, there was some disagreement over whether the Candy Staton interview was great or racially condescending. Though Anti-Everything posted, You've Got the Love is still one of the finest dance songs of all time.
If you disagree, then you're wrong.
That's a good opinion to hold.
One or two of you noticed that Telepathy's Melissa said like a lot, and the rest of you got caught up in a world of donk following Tim Jones's nomination for the Blackout Crew on Singles Club.
This is me typing my name, said. I can't decide whether the coverage of the Blackout Crew is ironic appropriation of the awful or middle-class sneering at them up north. Either way, the music is terrible, but is that really the point? They're six young guys making stupid music and they'll probably get a shed load of money and enough groupies to fill a small island. And if that isn't the point of making music, I don't know what is.
Well, Japantha said, Blackout Crew, why hasn't anyone mentioned Goldie Looking Chain yet?
Well, Madrid Mike chimed in. The donk track is inoffensive nonsense and will doubtless be enjoyed by the same comedy geniuses who pissed themselves when watching Little Britain.
Made me laugh. You couldn't seem to decide whether the Prodigy track was actually worse or better than Blackout Crew, but Mark 88 knows what he likes. This podcast is boring. Bring back the ginger bloke and make him do jazz hands. What this podcast needs is more cowbell.
See what we did there.
You're doing jazz hands right now.
Yeah, I always do jazz hands. I can't actually cycle because always jazzing. Post comments on this week's guest, Crystal Stilt, and the marvellous sparkling extravaganza that was the Brit on the blog at the new, simpler address of guardian.co.uk/musicweekly. And if you search for Music Weekly on Facebook, you can become our fan there too. Such a condescending term. Thanks ever, ever so much to our Rosie.
Thank you, Angry Tomato. No, it was just tomato.
Tomato, red and thin skinned, you see. We're back from next Friday. Until then, TTFN.